right. Okay, good morning. We are on in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Dalet. We're going to start at the very, very bottom, the last line of Gimel Amud Beis. If you recall, we had been discussing when the year flips. Does it flip in terms of counting the year of the reign of a king for the purpose of Minyan Shtaros, of dating a shtar, a legal document? Does it flip at Tishrei or does it flip at Nisan? And we said in our Mishnah that it flips at Nisan, but then we said that for Malchei, that's true for Malchei Yisrael. But for Malchei Umos HaOlam, it flips at Tishrei. And then there was some confusion as to various psukim in Ezra that referred to the dating of Shtar, or the dating of the reign of Koresh. And it wasn't clear whether it flips at Tishrei or it flips at Nisan, and we explained it by saying that the psukim that dated the flip at Nisan, that's Kodem Shechmitz, before Koresh turned bad, and where it dates it at Tishrei, that's Lachar Shechmitz, after he turned bad. And if you recall, the Gemara, just a few lines previous, basically conflated Daryavesh and Koresh, Aratachshasta, as well as one king. If you actually looked in Ezra, it doesn't appear that way at all. So it's a questionable whether this is meant to be a homiletic exercise by saying that they're all the same, or whether this is historically true. But at least for our the purposes of our sugya, we're assuming that all three are the same king. And the Gemara now questions whether that's true, that in fact Koresh turned bad. The Gemara says, Maskev Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana challenged this and said, Umi Hechmetz, whoever said that Koresh ever turned bad? He was always referred to as a good king. We always identified him as a good king. Why are we suggesting that he turned bad? V'haksiv, doesn't the Pasuk in Ezra, in the sixth parak of Ezra, say about Koresh's instructions the following? Umah chashchan, whatever they want, whatever the Kohanim need, meaning he's explaining that his kingship is going to donate to the Beis HaMikdash whatever needs or whatever materials are necessary for the functioning of the Beis HaMikdash. Ubnei Torin, any kind of bulls that they need, v'dichrin and rams, v'amarin and lambs, la'alon, le'ela shemaya, to bring as olos, as offerings for the ruler of the world, to Hashem, chantin, whatever wheat they need, melach, salt, chemar, wine, umashach, and oil, kamamar kohana dibi Yerushalayim, whatever the kohanim in Yerushalayim specify that they need. Luhum yisyahiv lahem, it should be given to them, yom biyom, every day, di lo shalo, without any, without fail, it should always be given to them. So it sounds here like, even later on in his life, where this pasuk in the sixth parak of Ezra is describing Koresh's instruction, it sounds like he's doing all the right things. He's saying, give whatever the Kohanim need, give whatever the Beis HaMikdash needs to function. So Amar lo Rabbi Yitzchak, Rebbe Matuncha, it's just the opposite, because the pasuk continues as follows, Dilahon, it should be allowed for them, Me'akreven Nichochen, to give as offerings Eila Shemaya to Hashem, Umatzlin L'chayi Malka Uvinohi. And as a result, the Kohanim, when they bring those offerings, should daven on behalf of the king and his sons. Meaning that Koresh had ulterior motives. And even though it's true he was donating all these things to the Beis HaMikdash without limit, still it was his intentions that were flawed. And that's why the Gemara says that he was Hechmetz. Originally, his intentions were good. And these psukim, which are describing what sounds like very generous offerings by Koresh, but since it was underlying these were bad intentions, that's why we're saying that it's Lachar Shechmetz, that he turned bad. The Gemara immediately challenges this and says, Uman David Hachi Lav Mal Yusahi, someone who does this, someone who donates for ulterior motives, for the purposes of people davening on his behalf, that's not a good thing. Vatanya, don't we have a brisa that says, Omer sela zu tztaka, someone who says, I'm going to give this money to tztaka, bishvil sheyichyu banai, in order that my sons should live, ubishvil sheezke ba, uchay olam haba, and in order to serve as a merit for olam haba for me, hareze tzadik gamur, not only is this acceptable to give tzedakah for an ulterior motive in order for a zechus for someone else or for yourself, but not only that, but it's a tzaddik gemar. Rashi says someone who does this on a regular basis is a tzaddik gemar. So the gemara answers lo kasha. It's not a question. Kan be Yisrael, kan bo ovdei kol chavim. So the way Rashi explains this is to say that for Yisrael, for a Jewish person to give tzedakah in order to get a merit for himself, in order to get something for it, that's not so bad, because the Jew realizes that even if things don't come through okay for him, even if it fails, the experiment, he still knows that Hashem is in charge, and he knows that that he doesn't kind of complain that I shouldn't have given the money because it wouldn't have worked out. Whereas the Oved Kol Chavim, a non-Jew, doesn't have that same appreciation for the way things work, and Rashi says, Korei Tagar, he's going to kind of call this out as some kind of terrible injustice, that here he gave the tzedakah for his zechus for himself, for some benefit for himself, and it didn't work out, and so he's going to regret the whole thing. So it's interesting, if you look at the Tosfos on top, right, we're saying here that at least for a Jew, there's absolutely nothing wrong nothing wrong about giving tzedakah in order to attain a benefit for yourself. If you look at the top Tosfos, Bishvil Shiyichi Ubanai, he challenges this from a Mishnah in Avos, which it says, Al tiyu ka'avadim ha'mishamishin sarav ha'manas l'kabel pras. The Mishnah tells us that you shouldn't do mitzvos in order to get reward. You shouldn't give tzedakah, presumably, in order to get some kind of reward for it. So Tosfos answers by saying, Hainu buma sa'olam shetoan al rishonos. He actually says, surprisingly, that the Mishnah in Avos is talking about Ovdei Kol Chavim, of non-Jews. So non-Jews shouldn't give, or shouldn't do mitzvot, or shouldn't give tzedakah in order to be mekabel pras. For a Jew, as we see here, it's perfectly acceptable. It's a little hard to believe that the Mishnah in Avos is directed towards non-Jews. Most of Avos, we presume, is talking to Jews.
To rabbis.
To rabbis, yeah. So,
shouldn't take money from
That's a good question. I don't know. That's a whole separate discussion. But anyway, whatever. There's all sorts of discussions among the Achronim as to what all this means. At least the Ramah, who paskins in Hilchas Tzedakah, he paskins specifically with regard to Tzedakah, that there's nothing wrong with giving Tzedakah with the expectation of getting rich. Right? The drasha that Chazal make on the pasuk is Aser, Kedei Shetish. Tis asher, give your tithing, give your maaser in order to get rich. There's nothing wrong, says the Ramah, specifically with doing it in the merit of getting rich and actually testing Hashem and seeing if it works. He says, go right ahead, test Hashem and see what happens. The Pisklei Tshuva there says that that's only true in terms of testing Hashem to see if you get rich. But if you test Hashem by giving tzedakah to see if something else will happen, such as b'shvosh eskebo chay olam haba, or whatever it is, that's something that's inappropriate. So there's a whole discussion as to the appropriateness of kind of giving tzedakah for ulterior motives.
That Ovdei Kachavim can give tzedakah to something
kodesh. That's true. Yeah, that's right. That's true about the whole enterprise of Koresh. He was giving tzedakah for the Beis Hamikdash. He was supporting the Jewish
endeavors.
The rebuilding, right, the endeavors there. Okay, so fine. So this is one theory as to what the basis is for saying that Koresh was hichmitz, that Koresh turned bad. V'bayisema, others say, minon da'achmitz, how do we know that he turned bad? Dechsiv, another pasuk later on that parak, or I think it's earlier, nidvachin di'evin galo, tlasa, rows of stone three, v'nidvach di'achadas, and rows of one of wood one, min beis malka tisyoev, and I'll give all the expenses for building the Beis HaMikdash. What this is saying is that Koresh, when he pledged all this money to the Beis HaMikdash, he specified that three of every four rows should be made out of concrete, and one of every four rows should be made out of wood.
Just in case everyone wants to burn it.
Exactly. That's what the Gemara is going to say. Lamalei David Hachi, why did he do this? Savar imardu biyudai, if the Jews ever turn on me, if they ever rebel against me, Ikli Benura, I can easily burn down the Beis HaMikdash. So he sabotaged it from the very beginning. So the Gemara is saying this was the indication that we have that Koresh was not such a good guy. He was, even as he was giving the tzedakah, even as he was promising to build the Beis HaMikdash, he was potentially sabotaging it. To which the Gemara says, what do you mean? Atu Shlomo Avarachi, Shlomo Melech himself, at the time of the building of the first Beis HaMikdash, he also built it partially with wood. Vaksiv says in the Pasuk of Malachim Aleph, Shlosha Turei Gazis, in describing the building of the Beis HaMikdash by Shlomo, it says three rows of stone, Vitur Karsus Arazim, and one row of wood. So Koresh was just following the model that Shlomo HaMelech followed. Gemara's answer is Shlomo Avad Milamala, Viu Avad Milamata. Shlomo put the wood up top, whereas Koresh put the wood on the bottom in a much more precarious way, so that it would have called into question the structure much easily. It's much easier to burn down when the wood is the supporting beam. David, is that true? If the wood is on the bottom, yep. So then you could build the whole thing, it'll come crashing down. Whereas if the wood's on top, that's not so terrible. And similarly, or furthermore, Shlomo Shake Bibinyana, Shlomo embedded it within the concrete. So the I don't think they had invented concrete yet. But Shlomo embedded it within the plaster, or within the stone, and so therefore it was protected from fire. Iu lo shake b'minyana, whereas Koresh should not. Shlomo sadja b'sida, Shlomo plastered it. Iu lo sadja b'sida. So Shlomo built it in a way that was much more structurally safe, whereas Koresh really potentially sabotaged the whole structure from the beginning, from the very beginning. Fine. Or dosei vitem rav Yitzchak amar, minon da achmitz. So here's a third opinion as to how we know that Koresh turned bad. Mehacha, from the following pasuk in Nehemiah, where it says, Vayomer li hamelech, vashagal yosheves etzlo. So Nehemiah is narrating here, and he's explaining that he had this conversation with the melech being Koresh, and he says, in describing his conversation with the melech, vashagal yosheves etzlo, that this shagal was sitting next to Koresh. My shagal, what is a shagal? Amarab barlema mishmei derav kalbasa. It was a dog. And Rashi explains that the Kalbasa had a special intimate relationship with Koresh that violated the Torah. And Rashi points out here that even Bnei Noach are prohibited to such intimate relationships with animals. And that's an indication that Koresh was not such a good guy. Here he had this dog as his best friend in an inappropriate way. Right, well, right, especially if you're conflating, Daryavish was the son of Esther, so if you're conflating, as the Gemara does, Daryavish and Koresh, so then that's a whole question. But at least Rashi right here assumes that Koresh himself was a Ben Noach, but that's true. The Gemara then says, Elameata, if that's the way you want to interpret the word Shagol, Hadichsiv, what about the following Pasuk, Ve'almara Shemaya Hisramamta, this is where Belshazzar is meeting with Daniel, and Daniel, this is the whole story with the writing on the wall. So, right, Belshazzar is throwing a party, and all the people are there, and all of a sudden this visible hand comes and starts writing graffiti on the wall, and none of Belshazzar's advisors can explain what this writing means, and they call Daniel, and Daniel starts interpreting the writing, and he explains, he gives Musar to Belshazzar, and he says, Belshazzar, your grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, so he was, at least for part of his life, much more humble and understood that Hashem is in charge, and that's why he succeeded, whereas you, Belshazzar, are all haughty, and you think you're in charge, and that's why the pasuk, and I think this is Daniel's description of what's going on. He says, Valmara Shemai Yisramamta, you raise yourself above Hashem, Umanya Dibesa Hisayu Kadamach, and you bring forth the vessels from the Beis HaMikdash, Ve'ant V'rabbunusach Shaglosach Uchanosach, and you and your lords and your Shaglosach, we'll see what that means, that's the word we're trying to interpret, Uchanosach, and your concubines, Chamra Shasin Bahun, you drink wine from these vessels. So the Gemara says, V'ishago Kalbasahi, and if it's true that a shagol is a dog, Kalbasa bas mishtaya chamrihi. Does a dog drink alcohol? Does a dog drink wine? It's hard to understand how this could really mean a dog. So the Gemara answer is halokasha the pasuk, the pasuk pshat shaglascha, when you translate the pasuk, means your wives. But the Agamar is arguing that shagasa means dogs. So the Gemara answer is halo kasha demalfale vishasya. The truth is, the Gemara says you can train a dog to drink alcohol. I don't know if anyone's ever tried it, but apparently you could train your dog to drink alcohol. And so therefore, Belshazzar had trained his dog to drink alcohol, and then it makes sense. So the Gemara then again challenges our interpretation of the word shaga, elameata, dechsiv, benos, melachim, biyukiro secha, nitnatzva shagal yeminecha, bekesem ofir. So this is a pasuk from Tehillim that's, I think, describing Klal Yisrael, and talking about the greatness of Klal Yisrael. It says, "Benos Moachim Yikiro Secha," that princes, or I should say princesses, are among your favorites. Natzva Shagol Yimenecha, this Shagol sits at your right. Bekesem Ophir, and as a result, you're going to merit getting gold of Ophir, Ophir someplace. So the Gemara says, "Vishagol Kalbasi, Maikam Mavasu Unavu Yisrael." So if Shagol here means dog, it doesn't really make sense in this pasuk where it's talking about the greatness of Klal Yisrael. What is the Navi here saying that's so great about Klal Yisrael and describing like a dog? So the Gemara answers, Hachi ka'amar, bischar shechaviva toru Yisrael keshagal of the kochavim tzachisa mekeser ofir. So this is a very strange drasha of this pasuk here, which is to say that the reason the pasuk uses the word shagal is because it's saying, with the schar that it's talking about, the schar that you get, this kesem ofir, this gold is the schar you get because that Klal Yisrael gets because it loves its Torah, right? Torah is beloved to Klal Yisrael, keshego lovder kchavim, as much as a dog is loved by a non-Jew. Again, harking back to the relationship that Koresh had with his dog. So therefore, zachisim lekesem ofir. That's why we attain this gold. That's why we are rewarded with this gold, because our relationship with the Torah is like the relationship of a non-Jew with his dog, which is a very, it sounds a little crude, as a way of referencing how chaviv, how beloved the Torah is to Klal Yisrael. So the Netziv points out that the reason the Gemara, or the reason the Pasuk actually uses this metaphor for describing the closeness of Klal Yisrael and Torah is because it's just that he says something like, just as you, an outsider who doesn't have an attraction to dogs can't comprehend why someone would have an attraction to dogs, so too umos ha'olam, the non-Jews, can't comprehend the level of the attraction for Bnei Yisrael to the Torah. So the way that the Medrash, the way that the Pasuk in Tehillim wants to convey that concept, that an outsider can't really or ever really appreciate the level of Klal Yisrael's affection for Torah, is by making medame to the relationship of a non-Jew with his dog. Fine. The thing where it says v'baisema, you could also say v'olam shegel malchusa. He really shegel means a queen. V'raba bar lema gemara gamirla. Really, generally, shegel as a word means queen. But Rabba Bar Lema, who was the one who first introduced this explanation of how Koresh was machmitz, of how Koresh turns back, he had a specific tradition that in the context of that pasuk, it meant dog, and that's why he was able to darshan that you know, indicates that Koresh turned bad. But it doesn't generally throughout Tanakh mean dog, and that explains the pasuk in Tehillim a little better. Fine. Gemara Kamir Lava, my Karla Shagel, and why in that specific context, in that pasuk where it means dog, why did it call it Shagel? Sheisa Chaviva Lav Keshagel, because it was, that dog was as beloved to Koresh as his own wife. That's the point it's trying to get. Inami Sho Shiva B'makom Shagel, where that he kept the dog in its own special doghouse, like the queen would have her own special palace. Guy, fine. The Gemara offers one final explanation of how we know that Koresh was machmitz, that Koresh turned bad. Ibaisem, you could always also say minon da achmitz. How do you know that he turned bad? Mehacha, from the following pasuk. Ad kesef ki karen meya ve'anchantin karen meya. Well, before we say the pasuk, let's just review the story with Ezra. What happened was, if you recall, Koresh told them to build the Beis HaMikdash, and then there were some bad guys they started to build the Beis HaMikdash. The Jews went to Yerushalayim, started to build the Beis HaMikdash. And then there were some bad Jews who lived in Eretz Yisrael who started complaining that the Jews are not going to be loyal to the Malchus, they're not going to be loyal to your kingdom, they're going to rebel. And so later on, and it's again, it's the question whether we're talking about Koresh or the next king in the lineage, but the king then ordered the Jews to stop building because he took seriously this complaint by the other people that they weren't going to be loyal. And so a bunch of years passed where the Beis HaMikdash were all building halted on the Beis HaMikdash. It was like any, you know, modern day construction project of a shul where there are periods of time where construction just stops for whatever reason. Then the Jews tried to get things going again, and so they approached Koresh. At this point, the Tanakh refers to it as Daryavesh. They approached Daryavesh to start rebuilding again, and they said, "You have to let us rebuild because your predecessor's predecessor, Koresh, he told us we could build." So Daryavesh questioned that. There was like poor record keeping. It wasn't clear whether, in fact, the Jews had had the authority to build the Beis HaMikdash. And so they went to the storehouses and they looked for the old Megillahs, the old documents. And in fact, they uncovered the original authorization for the building. And then then the king reauthorized the building. And so now this pasuk, so the description we had above, which was Ezra Perek Vav, was the original. I think that was the text of the original authorization to build. Now Ezra Zion is referring to the king's reauthorization to build. And here it says, Ad Kesef Kikrin Mea. So you should give silver to the Beis HaMikdash, to the effort to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, up to 100 Kikrin, Vad Chantin, and give wheat, Korin Mea. Meaning here he's defining the exact parameters of how much can be given. Vad Chemer Batin Mea, and give 100 Batin of wine, v'albatin mashach mea, and give 100 something or other of oil, u'melach dilo, and as much salt as they want. I guess salt is cheap. Dilo kasav, you know, as much as they want. So, meikara blokitusa. In the first authorization by Koresh to build the Beis HaMikdash, as we saw above, it was as much as they want. There was absolutely no limit on how much should be spent. V'ashta b'kitsusa, and now we see Koresh later in his life, assuming that they were talking about all these kings being one personality, here he is limiting it and saying they could only spend $100 or 100 whatever on this, on each of these things. So the Gemara says, well, that's not really a proof. V'dilma me'ikara lo hava kimwe b'kitsusa. Maybe in the beginning, that was before they actually got to the later stages, before they actually built the Beis HaMikdash, and so therefore he didn't know the exact parameters of how much they would need. He didn't know the measurements, whereas now this is much later in the building, they're getting ready to offer sacrifices, maybe they're even offering sacrifices already, and so therefore here he's specifying how much can be given because he understands the reality of how much they need. So therefore that's not a proof that Koresh had turned bad at this point. They reject this answer and they say, okay, go back to one of the previous reasons or previous proofs that Koresh turned bad. Okay, that's the end of that, the whole sugya of dating shtaros by Minyan Malachim. And now we go on to the next part of the Mishnah, which said that Nisan is Rosh Hashanah l'Regalim. Right, we said, Be'echad b'Nisan Rosh Hashanah l'Malachim u'Regalim. So what does that mean, that it's the Rosh Hashanah for holidays? The Gemara immediately questions, Regalim Be'echad b'Nisan, you're telling me that Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the first day of Nisan, is the first of the holidays, B'chamisha Asar b'Nisan, if you're going to choose any holiday as a Rosh Hashanah for holidays, you have to at least choose the holiday. And Pesach doesn't start on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, it starts on the 15th day of Nisan. So what's it talking about? Amar Rav Chista Regel Shabo Rosh Hashanah L'Regalim. Rav Chista says, what it means to say is that the holiday that falls out in Nisan, that holiday is the Rosh Hashanah L'Regalim, is the Rosh Hashanah for all the holidays. So what does that mean? Nafkamina L'Noder L'Meka Malei B'Bal Ta'acher. It's a Nafkamina for someone who makes a Neder, for someone who obligates himself to give tzedakah or to bring something to the Beis HaMikdash or to bring a karban, to do any sorts of, all sorts of things of giving to Hekdesh, that he has a deadline of Baal Ta'achar. The pasuk in Devarim, Perek Chav Gimel, says, Ki sidor neder la'Hashem, el kecha lo sa'acher l'shalmo, that when you make a neder to give a gift to Hashem, to do something, to give to the Beis Hamikdash, to give tzedakah, you shouldn't delay in fulfilling your requirements. And as we'll see on Omen Beis, the psukim interpret what the deadline is based on the regalim. And so for purpose, and as we'll see in a moment, Pesach is going to be the Rosh Hashanah l'regalim in determining how that time is calculated. V'Rabbi Shimon hi. And specifically, this works in accordance with the view of Rabbi Shimon, because we're going to see, we have a machlokes as follows. The Tanya, we have a Braisa that says, and this we actually, we encountered this last Masecht in Beitza, but it's introduced here as well. Echad anoder, ve'echad amakdish, ve'echad amarech. So anyone who consecrates and promises to give money to the Beis Hamikdash, or if he's makdish an animal to the Beis Hamikdash and has to give the animal to the Beis Hamikdash, or he does erchin, he evaluates his own worth based on the psukim in the Torah, and he's pledging a certain amount of money to the Beis Hamikdash. So all those people, anyone who does any of those activities, kevan she'avro lev gimel regalim over bebal ta'acher. So his deadline for fulfilling his promise and delivering his gift to the Beis Hamikdash is three regalim, three yomim tovim, Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos. That's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Shimon Omer, so, and the Tanakhama sounds like he's saying in any order. So if you make your neder right before Shavuos, you have Shavuos, Sukkos, and Pesach to fulfill your obligation. Pesach will be your deadline. If you
three. It's all three, not the next one?
That, according to the Tanakhama, it's all three. You get a deadline of three. We'll see, there's a machlokes here. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says, Gimel Regalim Kesidron. You have a deadline of three holidays, but they have to be in order. V'chag HaMasos Tchila. And Pesach comes first. And as we'll see, how does that work? V'chinei Rabbi Shimon Yochai Omer. Rabbi Shimon Yochai kind of explains Rabbi Shimon's Shita. Regalim Pamim Gimel. Sometimes you'll have three to do it. Like if you made your nether right before Pesach, so then you do it Pesach Shavuos Sukkos, right? Pamim Dalet. If you made your nether right before Sukkos, so then you have Sukkos Pesach Shavuos Sukkos. That's four. If you made your Pamim Chamisha, if you made your nether right before Shavuos, so then you have Shavuos Sukkos and then Pesach Shavuos Sukkos. You kind of always have to catch up, and then you do your three starting with Pesach. He says it. Kate said, "Nazir ufnei Pesach, Gimel ufnei Atzeres, Chamishu ufnei Chag Arba." So it all depends on when you made your neder. You can have either three, four, or five as your deadline. Tana Rabban, and then we have a similar brisa that explains similarly. Chayve hadamin va'erchin. So again, all these types of pledges that you can make, whether you're pledging money va'erchin or erach, your worth va'charamin, where you consecrate something, v'akdeshos, where you dedicate something to the Beis Hamikdash, chatos, v'ashamos, olos, v'shlamim, all sorts of karbonos that you promise to make, tztakos, umasros, bechor, umaiser, upesach. There are some situations where even a karbon pesach might have to be brought as a tashlumin. If you fail to make the karbon pesach, you have to bring kind of shlamim in substitution for it. So again, there's deadlines you're going to hit. Leket shicha upeya, as Ptosis points out, if you kind of take the payah for yourselves, you're going to have to repay it. So in those situations also, you're going to run against the deadline. And here's the deadline. Kevin she'avro aleihem shlosha regalim over bebal ta'acher. Once you've passed three regalim, three yamim tovim, three of the shlosh regalim, that's when you're over on bebal ta'acher, on having missed your deadline for giving your gift. Rabbi Shimon Omer, shlosha regalim kesidron. As we just said, Rav Shimon holds that the regalim are counted in order. Chag HaMatzos, Pesach comes first. Rav Meir Omer, Kevin Shavra Alein Regal Echad Over Abbal Tacher. So Rav Meir says that even one regal triggers your Bal Tacher prohibition. You have to bring it at the next regal in order not to be over the Isser of Bal Tacher. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer Kevin Shavra Alein Shnei Regalim Over Bebal Ta'acher. So Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says that your deadline is two regalim. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon Omer Kevin Shavra Alein Chagasukos Over Alein Bebal Ta'acher. He holds that Sukkos is always the deadline. No matter what time of year you did it, you get the whole year until Sukkos, or not even the whole year. If you did it right before Sukkos, then Sukkos is your deadline. Did it before Pesach, you still get Pesach, Shavuos, and then Sukkot is your dinner. Sukkot is the killer. That's the one that triggers Baal Ta'achir. So now we're going to try to understand how these different Tanaim come up with such a varied set of explanations for Baal Ta'achir, deadlines for Baal Ta'achir. My time at the Tanakama. So how does the Tanakama, what's the reason for the Tanakama? What's the basis for the Tanakama, who had said that it's three regalim, regardless of how you count them, regardless of the order? So the Gemara says, Michtei minayu salik. So if you look in the Psukim in Dvarim Tes Zayin, where it talks about the regalim there, so you have the parsha of, I think it's Pesach first, then Shavuos, and then Sukkos. And then at the end of the description of Sukkos, the Pasuk reviews all three. It says, Bechag Hamatzos v'chag HaShavuos v'chag HaSukkos. It reviews all three. So the Gemara says, Michtei minayu salik, we just finished describing the three Moadim, the three Regalim, one after another. Why does it have to go back and review all three and say, what is the Pasuk adding by reviewing the three Moadim that we just discussed? It must be this extra description of the three holidays is to teach you that Baal Ta'achir is triggered upon the passage of three holidays without regard to the order. That's the Tanakama. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon was the one, if you recall, who said that we're going in order and that Pesach comes first, right? So the Rabbi Shimon Omer, Einot Tzarech Omer B'chag HaSukkos Shabo Diber HaKasuv. So the way the parshas work out, again, it's Chag HaMatzos gets one parsha, then Chag HaShavuos, and then Chag HaSukkos, and then in that same parsha of Chag HaSukkos, it now repeats B'chagamatzos. So I can understand if you want to kind of just tie it all together, the Pasuk would now review the other Moadim. But the Torah just finished describing Chag HaSukkos, we're still in the Parsha of Chag HaSukkos. And so if it just wanted to review the all Moadim, it could have finished its description of Chag HaSukkos and then say, and also Chag HaMatzos and also Chag HaShavuos. Why does the Pasuk have to add Chag HaMatzos and Shavuos and Sukkos again? Why does it have to say Sukkos right there in the parsha we just finished describing it? Laman Emar, Lomer Shezeh Achron. So Rabbi Shimon says this is a drasha to teach you that Chag HaSukkos is the last of the three. In other words, that there's an order here. And therefore, you don't trigger Baal Ta'achir until you've passed all three Moadim, all three Regalim in order. Good. Rabbi Meir, my Taima. Rabbi Meir was the one who held that any one regel would trigger Baal Ta'achir. Rabbi Meir, my Taima, Dichsiv Uvasa Shama Veivesa Shama. The Pasuk a little earlier in Parag Yud Beis says, Uvasa Shama. I think that's the end of the Pasuk, and then the next Pasuk starts Veivesa Shama. But it says, but if you read it kind of, if you read the two Pesukim together, it says, Uvasa Shama, when you come to Yerushalayim for your Regalim, Veivesa Shama, then you should bring your Karban. As if to say, when you get to Yerushalayim, bring your Karban. You get one chance, and that's it. One Regal. Good. For Rabbanan, so what are the Rabbanan going to do with that Pasuk? When the Rabbanan, I guess here means all the other opinions, all the other opinions. What are they going to do with that Pasuk? Which sounds pretty clear that you have a deadline of one regel. It says, when you get there, you should bring your karban. Hahu la'aseh. So that's actually true. You should bring the karban on the first regel after you make your neder. But that's just an aseh. The lav of Baal Ta'achir, that's only triggered based on the other drushes, that's only triggered based on the passage of three regalim. Of Rabbi Meir, so what does Rabbi Meir say to that? Kevan de amra le rachmana, I see, v'lo I see, memeo kamwe b'baal ta'achir. Rabbi Meir says, what are you talking about? You're parsing aseis and lavs. If the Torah has a lav of baal ta'achir that says, don't bring it late, and then the Torah in a different place says, the appropriate time to bring it is on the first regal, so put two and two together, and say, the lav is defined by the essay, where the Torah expresses a preference that you bring that karban on the first occasion, the first regel. So then, when the Torah says, don't bring it late, it means bring it when you should have brought it on the first regel. That's what Ramir argues. Good. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, my taima. So what's the basis for Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov? What did he say? He said, two regalim. Where did that come from? Dechsev Ela Ta'asu LaHashem B'Moadeichem. You should do these karbanos. You should do these things on your holidays, plural. Miut Moadim Shnayim. We have generally in Shas when you have a plural and you don't know how many, so you go with the miut. The most basic explanation of a plural is two. Two is the smallest plural, and therefore he is assuming that you have two regalim to bring your karban. V'rabbanan, how are the rabbanan going to understand this? Ha'hu l'chad Rabbi Yona, they understand this pasuk as teaching you it's something different based on the memory of Rabbi Yona. The Amar Rabbi Yona, hukshu kol ha'moadim kulam zela zeh. So he has that completely different drasha that he used that as a drasha to link together all the moadim, that they all the coming of a moed is mechaper on someone who was over on tumas mikdash v'kadashav, that he went into the base of mikdash or he kadshim betuma. Fine. V'Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, my taima. Rabbi Shimon was the one who held what?
Chagasukos,
right? Yeah, the Chagasukos is the hard stop at Chagasukos. No matter what, you can wait till Sukkos, but then you have to bring it at Sukkos. How does he get that? The Tanya of Rabbi Shimon Omer Lo Yomar Chagasukos Shabo Dibarakos Lo Yomar Chagasukos Shabo Dibarakos. Again, the explanation we gave before, that the pasuk doesn't have to repeat Chagasukos when it reviews all three moadim, because that pasuk is contained in the description of Chagasukos itself. So it could have just reviewed and Chagamatzos and Chagashuvos. Why does it repeat Chagasukos in the very parsha of Chagasukos? Alam and Emor Lomer Shezeh Goreim, to teach you that Chagasukos is the Goreim for Baal Ta'acher. There's a once a year deadline of Chagasukos, and that's it. Good. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, hi, b'chag ha-matzos, b'chag ha-shavuos, b'chag ha-sukos, my darshi bay. So they don't need, they had other psukim for their limudim. Why do they have this pasuk of chag ha-matzos, chag ha-shavuos, chag ha-sukos? It seems superfluous to be repeating the three holidays after the Torah just got finished describing them. My darshi bay, mi boy luhu, luchad Rabbi Elazar. V'chad Elazar amar Rabbi Oshia. The Amar of Elazar, Amar of Oshia, Minayin la'atzeres she'esh la'tashlumin kol shiva. How do we know that if you forgot to bring or failed to bring the Karban Chagiga on Shavuos, that you get to make it up for a full week afterwards, right? This is why we don't say Tachnun for a full week after Shavuos. You get a full 7 days afterwards, even though Shavuos is only one day biblically, you get a full week to make it up. Talmud Omer b'chag ha-matzos v'chag ha-shavuos v'chag ha-sukos. The pasuk says all three holidays. Makish chag ha-shavuos v'chag ha-matzos. It compares chag ha-shavuos to chag ha-matzos to teach you. Ma chag ha-matzos yesh lo tashlumin kol shiva. When it comes to Pesach, we know that you have 7 days to make up your karban if you didn't bring it on the first day, as Rashi points out, because the pasuk in, I think Rashi said it. Yeah, by Chag Matzos it says v'chago semo so chago Hashem shivas yamim. So that shivas yamim teaches you that you make up for the missed karban for the full 7 days of karban of Chag Pesach. So af Chag Shavuos yoshol tashlum in kol shiva. So too when it comes to Shavuos, you have a full 7 days to make up your karban. Aye, the Gemara says, V'lekesh l'chagasukos. Why are you limiting it, the hekesh, to Chag HaMatzos, which has 7 days? Why don't you compare it to Sukkos, which has 8 days? Ma'la halon shmona, afkan shmona. Because Chagasukos, we know, is 8 days long. Right? Shmini Atzeres is at the end. So the Gemara answers, Shmini regel bifnei atzmo. Famously, the Gemara answers that the eighth day is a regel bifnei atzmo. Don't think that you can learn from Sukkos that you have 8 days to make up your tashlum on Shavuos, because the eighth day is its own separate independent holiday. It's its own separate independent holiday. So the Gemara then says, "Emor da'amrinan shmini regel bifnei atzmo inyan pazar kashav." Maybe it's only true that Shmini Atzeres is its own holiday for purposes of pazar kashav, which is a Rosh Tevos to teach different instances in which, or different aspects, in which Shmini Atzeres is considered its own independent holiday. I'll just finish the sentence, then we'll go through the Pazer Kashav. Avalin Tashlumin Devrei Kol Tashlumin Derishonu. But maybe, when it comes to Tashlumin, the ability to make up the carbon if you forgot to bring it on the first day, or if you didn't bring it on the first day, everyone would agree that you have straight through 8 days to bring it. Ditnan, Mishlo Chag, Yom Tov Arishon Shel Chag, Chogig Es Kol Regov, Yom Tov Achron Shel Chag. You get to bring your carbon chag. You got the entire holiday and the 8th day. So you do have 8 days on Sukkot. So again, the Gemara is faced with the question of why, when the Gemara compared Shavuos to Sukkot and Pesach, did it choose to say Shavuos, you have 7 days to make up the carbon? Why didn't it say you have 8 days to make up the carbon? Because it should have, it could have, as easily as it compared it to Pesach, it could have compared it to, made the Hekesh to Sukkot. So the answer is Tefasta Merubo Tefasta, Tefasta Mua Tefasta. When the Gemara has a choice of making a drusha with a minimal amount and a maximum amount, here 7 days or 8 days, it goes for the minimal, from the idea that kind of that if you take too much, you've taken too much. You just stick with the smaller amount. The idea being that the seven is included in the eight. Eight is included in seven, and therefore it chooses that drusha. Let's just review. Pazer Kashav, what are Pazer Kashav? What are the six examples for which we say that Shmini Atzeres is a regel bifnei atzmo? So Rashi explains pei means pious. This had to do with how they selected the Mishmaros of Kohanim to do the carbon musaf on the Untif. If you remember, all Sukkot long, there are lots and lots and lots of cows, right? There's like 70 cows are offered throughout all the musafin of the karbanos of Sukkot, and therefore there was enough to go around to all the mishmaros. They didn't have to do the lot that they would normally do, where you stick out two fingers and they count one potato, two potato, three potato, four potato. You didn't have to do that on Pesach because there were so many cows, so they would, depending on the day and how many cows, all the mishmaros would get a chance, and then some would even get two to go around. But when it came to Shmini Atzeres, so then the number went down, and it was considered a separate holiday, and so then they would do that one potato, two potato thing to figure out which of the Kohanim should bring. And then, that's pious. Zayin is Zman, that we say Shechianu. Resh is Regel, that it's considered its own Regel. And here, there's a machokas among the Rishonim as to what that means. Rashi says it means that it has a different name. Instead of saying Chagasukos in your Yahweh of Yavo, in Berkas HaMazon and Shemoneh Esrei, you say Chagashmini Chagatzeres Azeh. The Rabbeinu Hananel, quoted in the middle of this Tosfos, Pazer Kashav, says that it's referring to Hilchos Avelos. Shmini Atzeres is considered a regel of the Atzmo in terms of counting Shloshim, right? If a person... dies Erev Yontif, so then Yontif cancels Shiva, and then Shmini Atzeres cancels Shloshim. So it's considered regal of Nehatzmo for that purpose. That's regal. Then Karban is that its Karbanos are unique. They're not the regular Karbanos of Sukkot. It has its own description, its own Karbanos. That's Pazarka. And then Shin is Shir, that it is its own Shir, that the Levim sang in the Beis Migdash. And Beis is bracha, which Rashi explains some sort of bracha that they would bless the king on the Ma'adim. So Shmini Atzeres had its own special character, its own bracha that they used to bless the king. Fine. Just let's do the last line. Elomai hilchos kasvei rachmano l'chagasuko. So if that's true, then in this drasha we're comparing Chag HaShavuos to Chag HaPesach in terms of the number of days for Tashlumin for the Mist Karban. So then why is Sukkot also described in that Pasuk? The Pasuk described all three. And the Gemara answer is Lakshia L'Chag HaMatzos, in order to make a Hekesh to Chag HaMatzos, to compare Sukkot to Pesach, Ma Chag HaMatzos To'unlina, Av Chag HaSukkos To'unlina, that just like on Pesach, the halacha is that you have to sleep over in Yerushalayim until the next day, until the first day of Chol HaMoed. You can't just offer your karbanos of Pesach and then start walking home. You require a special mitzvah of lina. You have to sleep over. So too, that's true for Chagas Sukkos. You have to sleep over the first night of Yontif. You can't leave Motzei Yontif. You have to sleep over until the next day in Yerushalayim after you've brought the Karbanos of that day. Okay.